Good morning. Welcome and welcome again. Welcome to those who are starting today with us, and welcome again to those who came yesterday as well. We are running a little bit late, as you would have noticed, but we are going to stay with the same 45 minutes. But I'm going to be a little bit strict on the questions. So if you have really burning questions, ask immediately. And if you don't have such a burning question, just hold off and please talk to the speakers afterwards. Okay? And as you all know, there are three tracks. There's a policy track going on. This is a general session and a general technology. And there's an advanced technology as well. So hopefully you are at the right place that you meant to be or you planned on, right? So we welcome today, we start the sessions with effective cryptography of what's wrong with all these crypto APIs. So we're going to find out what's wrong with all of them. And I'm going to murder his name, I'm sure. Thorsten.
That's pretty good.
Okay. And he said, stop there. Don't even try my last name, so I'm not going to try. Thank you for that. He's a CTO with Utimaco, and he's going to talk about implementing cryptographic algorithms in software while overcoming the shortcomings of PKI 11 and JCE. Welcome, and thank you.
Thanks for the introduction, Nithya. Thanks, everybody, for being here and for having me here. It's my first time at ICMC. By the way, can you hear me well? Is that?
No.
Put it up. That doesn't look good. All right. Now that sounds better, right? All right. Okay. So, as the title and the subtitle of my presentation suggests, I'll be talking about crypto APIs, and I'll be talking about, you know, the workhorses of APIs that, you know, make all the server applications go that require crypto. And basically, my presentation broadly falls into two parts. In the first part, I'll be talking about, you know, what I think are some of the really well understood problems with some of the crypto APIs that we are using today. And I don't expect that I'll be telling you a lot of news in this first half. You know, I'll just remind you of some of the things that I believe are fairly well known in the industry. And then in the second part, I'll be talking about an approach that allows us to develop cryptographic algorithms in such a way that we overcome some of the limitations and challenges that I've been addressing in the first half of the presentation. And being here at ICMC and being with Utimaco, a maker of fine hardware security modules, I'll of course assume that you want to use these cryptographic APIs together with a hardware security module. So basically what I'll try to do during the next 40 minutes is to first talk about what I mean by effective cryptography. After all, effective cryptography is the title of the presentation. And then I'll be looking at crypto APIs basically from three angles: from the angle of security, from the angle of ease of use, and from the angle of runtime performance. And you know, you wouldn't be surprised to learn that I see some issues in all of these three areas. And then I dare make a prediction. So I'll be looking into my crystal ball, and I'll be basically telling you how in a couple of years from now everybody will implement cryptographic algorithms and software, because it's, you know, the solution to the problems. And I'll be basically kind of defining a North Star where we're going to be going in a couple of years from now, and then I'll introduce some technologies that we've been working on in our R&D team for a couple of month and actually years, so to speak, something entitled CryptoScript, and I'll be trying to be brief and you know, trying to show how it addresses the problems I outlined earlier, and then I'm gonna conclude with a bit of an outlook that, you know, details a couple of possible steps going from CryptoScript as a first logical step into the right direction towards, you know, making more and more progress. So So let's begin with a quick definition. What do I mean by effective cryptography? And what I mean by effective cryptography, first of all, I mean that it must be secure. If cryptography is not secure, you know, it's pointless. Second, cryptography to me is effective if it's actually efficient. So, and there are two aspects to it being efficient. One is, how long does it take you to get to a result? So how much time do you have to spend to code and verify and, you know, test an application? And then once you're done with all of that, you know, how fast does it actually run? So again, effective cryptography to me is cryptography that's both secure and efficient. Now, let us look at some of the APIs, and here is kind of, you know, a set of, you know, very well-known and heavily used cryptographic APIs. And let me now focus on what I feel is wrong with these crypto APIs. And as I said, you know, I'll probably not be telling you all that many new things. You know, I'll be basically reminding you of issues that are well understood in the industry. Let's begin with security. Let's begin with PKCS11 as a very, you know, heavily used API. There are just numerous key extraction attacks known, and you can read about it. You know, there's a body of literature on it. You know, there's Clulow's 2003 paper on the security of PKCS11. There is, you know, various publications around the Toucan project. You can look up, you know, recent CVE entries, not all of which sport PKCS11 in the text, but there's really a whole body of work, you know, a text around it. You know, it's a fairly well understood problem that there are these doors open. And let me just remind you and us. Of the main culprits, of the things that actually lead to these vulnerabilities. And kind of by and large, it begins with a confusing set of mechanisms and attributes that we have in PKCS11. You know, it's a really, really broad set, which is good, which makes it, you know, powerful API. But on the other hand side, you know, it actually, I'm not kidding, it takes automated model checkers to actually determine secure and insecure combinations. You know, we as human beings turn out to not be, you know, capable to understanding all the different combinations that would possibly lead to insecurities. The other problem is that if you implement the cryptographic function, you know, you break it into fine-grained operations, each of which separately is mapped onto the hardware security module. And the fact that you break it into you know, fine-grained operations and that intermediate results surface, you know, at the host, on the one hand side, open the door to eavesdropping, on the other hand side, you know, lead to the possibility of code insertion attacks and the like. The latter is possible because essentially the security overall of you know, PKCS11 application hinges on the security of the operating system you run it on, you know, because if that security is compromised, you know, you can replace the shared libraries, you can use ptrace hooks and so on and so forth to all, do all of these bad things that we know about. Now, PKCS11 is just one crypto API. You know, how do the others score? And actually, if we look at some of the other APIs, you know, we figure PKCS11 isn't the worst of the bunch. You know, in fact, you know, the same set of, let's say, for instance, wrapped decrypt attacks that we see are possible with PKCS11, they're actually possible with Microsoft Crypto API. They're actually possible by construction with this API. We find similar attacks possible with JCE, JCA. So it's not just a problem of one API, it's the whole range of host APIs that suffers from the same type of problems. And it gets even worse if you're using mixed APIs to access the same, you know, a shared set of keys on a hardware security module. Now, we need to understand before that the security problems that we're seeing here of course, need to be analyzed in the context of a given application. You know, so it hinges on how the application uses the API, what type of keys you're using, what types of operations you're using, what types of mechanisms and attributes are being set, and you know, which key policies are in place. And a lot of these a lot of these vulnerabilities can actually be analyzed. They can be overcome. Not all of them can be overcome by just coding your application in a different way. In some instances, you have to go and configure your cryptographic service provider in a particular way. In some instances, you have to go into the hardware security module and take extra measures there, which turn it. There's a balance in between it being a security problem and it being an efficiency problem, where you have to spend extra amount of, you know, extra effort to get your application to be provably secure. And as knowledge of these attacks evolves over the years, you actually have to go and reanalyze your applications over and over. Which brings us to the second part, efficiency. And, you know, looking at efficiency, I would first like to look at basically the development cost and the development time associated with developing a cryptographic application. Now, efficiency is more context dependent and more subjective than, you know, both security and runtime efficiency that I'm going to be talking about later on, because it hinges also on, you know, on legacy code, on the skill set of a team's background. You know, have you been using a particular API? Do you feel comfortable with an API? So I'll be basically resorting to just talking about first principles that are required to get security straight and to really have an API that can be used efficiently. What you see here as a background, for instance, is the class hierarchy of the Bouncy Castle lightweight API, if you print it out in A4. So I'm not here to bash particular APIs, but it's a whole lot of classes. And I kind of sort of think that Dijkstra had a point when he said simplicity is a prerequisite for reliability, and I think we heard that from Paul Kocher this morning as well. And so, you know, let me just add, you know, simplicity is not only a prerequisite for reliability, it's also a prerequisite for security. And I just don't see that with some of the APIs that we're using today. There are two other categories where I think that the APIs that we're using today are not picture perfect, and I think / hope you would all agree. One is that authentication should not come to an API as an afterthought, and again, PKCS11 is not the worst of the bunch. It's just that today, you know, I would expect to see something like multi-factor authentication. I also would expect to see something like M out of N authentication being part of a state-of-the-art API. And the same kind of holds for audit logging, because our customers, our HSMs are very often used in a custom, you know, environment. And people come and go like, you know, I have a requirement for something that has particular authentication requirements, that has particular logging requirements. And with standard APIs, as much as I would like to be able to fulfill it today, it's kind of difficult, and you got to come up with hybrid solutions that are kind of difficult to implement. Now, apart from it taking a long time, let's you know, once you're done with it, let's look at how efficient these things run, because after all, you know, you want good crypto performance. And one thing I see time and again is that people underestimate and forget about the impact of data transfers on the overall performance. You know, by and large, you know, a lot of the hardware security modules are actually used in a networked appliance. So for from the application that runs on a server, you go through the cryptographic service provider, the DLL that you load into your application. It goes through middleware, it goes through the network, it goes into a network appliance, it goes through a driver, it goes into the card. Now, you wish the card was the bottleneck in terms of the computational performance. In a lot of cases, it's not. You know, let me try to oversimplify a little, but you know, when you map something onto a hardware security module, you're probably, you know, shelling out cryptographic operations that take in the order of magnitude about a millisecond. You know, your signatures, you know, depending on what you know, how powerful an HSM you purchase, you know, what key size you use, but you know, order of magnitudes, we're talking about millisecond operations. The time it takes you to get to that HSM from a network, you know, even on a sunny day, you know, your 10 milliseconds effort. So it's, by and large, in a lot of cases, I can estimate, you know, a customer's runtime performance of an application by just counting the number of interactions that it has with a hardware security module and just go tally up the latency. Your mileage may vary. It depends on the number of round-trip data transfers per function. It depends on whether you've got a single-threaded or multi-threaded application, whether you're bound by latency or throughput, you know, whether you have load balancing in your equation or not, and if you use load balancing, whether you've got internal or external keys. So there are a lot of factors, which is the reason why I cannot give you the one factor, you know, that tells you how much performance you're losing by using these fine-grained APIs, but one thing's for sure, if you implemented your cryptographic functions as atomic commands, you know, which would be executed on the hardware security module, two things are for sure. It'll run faster, and it'll be more secure. Now, I'm not the first person to figure that out. You know, there's KMIP, for instance. You know, is trying to come to the rescue. KMIP has an interesting facet, which is the batched requests. So you can batch up requests. So, for instance, you know, if you've got 100 or 1,000 signatures that you want to do, you can send it out as a batch. You know, over the KMIP protocol. And what you get back is a batched request, and so you're dealing with part of the performance problem. And in fact, it's not just, you know, batched requests. You can actually there's a nice thing in KMIP that allows you to put a, you know, kind of placeholder for intermediate results, so you can kind of pipeline operations. You can use a return value from one operation and feed it into the next operation. Long story short, that really addresses some of the performance issues. Unfortunately, it's not really suited as a general crypto programming paradigm because, you know, it still lacks the flexibility and expressive power that you really get from an object-oriented or from a procedural programming language. Now, the question is, what would be, you know, a crypto programming paradigm that's actually suited to address all these needs? And now let me make a personal prediction. So I've been looking into my, you know, Yudimako crystal ball, which you see over here, and my prediction is that in a couple of years from now, running crypto apps within the secure perimeter of an HSM will become the norm. Now, I expect, and I actually kind of almost hope, that some of you go like, he's a lunatic, you know, he didn't take his medication in the morning, you know, this is totally far off, and please do so. It'll just make it sweeter for me if I come back in a couple of years and when I go like, I told you so. But let me also try to underline why I actually think that this prediction has some value to it and will really become reality. So once again, I truly believe that, you know, we're going to be talking about crypto apps, you know, running within the secure perimeter of an HSM. The drivers, by and large, will include security. You know, we spoke about that. It'll include cost because security is also a cost factor in terms of the effort, in terms of the assets that are at stake. There are other drivers which include ease of use, and I'll try to show you an approach that is really easy to use later on. Performance, we spoke about it, multi-tenancy, custom logging, and portability of these applications from one device to another. In terms of requirements that'll contribute to the whole trend, I believe that firewalling, binding of keys to an application and binding of an application to a particular device such that if you delete the application from the device, the keys are gone, and if you, you know, and that application can only run on a particular predefined set of devices, those will be hard requirements, and strong authentication will be part of that bill. Now again, the primary driver, I believe, is gonna be security, and security also from a cost perspective. And let's do a quick check. Let's do a comparison of the attack surface. And the two things I want to compare is you got a PKCS11 host program running. And that PKCS11 host program, it kind of sort of hinges on your host OS security. And it's got access basically to 50 plus functions. If you go through the header files, you'll see it's 68, but not all of them are relevant in this context. You'll find 200 plus mechanisms, it's actually 290 or so. And 50 plus attributes, again, there are some 90 in the header file, but not all of them count. But the attack surface and the state space and the possible set of combinations, it's so huge, it truly takes automated model, and it took in the past automated model checking approaches to determine secure and insecure combinations. Now compare that to a crypto app running inside the secure perimeter of an HSM with about 5 external commands. And it's really that few commands that you typically need. It's typically as many commands as your protocol has phases or stages. And you can club things together. So I really, really think there is a huge gain in terms of security. Now you may go like, you're nuts. You're telling us everybody is gonna write embedded software for a hardware security module. That's not gonna happen. And I've heard that before, both. The part where people tell me I'm nuts and the part about not writing embedded software. And let me show you the light, let me tell you why I think this is going to happen, and let me basically give you the three magic ingredients to a game changer that makes something like this happen. And the three magic ingredients are a truly easy to use API, combine that with firewalling of applications against each other on a computer, and then with a mechanism that truly enables third-party applications, and it can change an established market, and it has changed an established market, and mobile phones are one example. It's, 10, 15 years ago, the phone on the left-hand side would be the phone that we all wanted to have, but it was very hard to get, applications into that phone. It would be, a mobile network operator or the device maker itself who would have to program this. And then there were, by the same device maker, there were attempts, you see a device in the middle, to come up with something that would allow for, more applications to be written by users, but it didn't really happen, and kind of we're at that same stage with hardware security modules today. And the difference is the easy-to-use API combined with firewalling enabling third-party applications that, for instance, we're seeing with Android or iOS phones today. Question is, what type of language would we be using to develop such applications? And if you, again, look at the phone market, and again, the phone market is, if you've got like a 16-year-old son who learns how to code, probably the chances are that, writing code for an Android device is, his first programming experience. Managed language with automatic garbage collection, with firewalling, very easy to use, that give you a very steep learning curve, and that are device independent and portable make this happen. They made this happen in another market, and I truly believe they will make that happen in the hardware security module market And CryptoScript, which we've been developing at UDMACO, is, to me, a step into this logical direction. Let me explain how you use it. And the flow is really, you know, very, very simple. What you see here in the background as a picture is a picture of one of our FIPS 140-2 physical level 3 devices. And if you've got the CryptoScript runtime engine loaded, essentially what you can do is you can write with a text editor of your choice, you know, a cryptographic module in CryptoScript. Then you sign and load it onto the device. There's no development environment required. It's basically like writing a shell script. Once you load it onto the device, it is automatically compiled under the hood, and it's actually compiled on the card. So the whole development environment, you know, sits on the card such that you can be sure you don't have to deal with a tainted compiler or anything. It all happens under the hood. And then once the script is compiled, we fire it up once. You can either spawn a couple of threads such that, you know, it develops a life of its own and can do things every so many time units. Or you can register functions as commands. And these commands that you can then access from the outside, you know, you can trigger from a host application written in C or C++ or Java or C#, whatever, or you can write, you know, you can invoke it from a command line executable. And the point is that your host application cannot tell the difference whether the cryptographic function that you're triggering, or the command that you're triggering from the outside, was implemented in CryptoScript, or whether you used our C code SDK to implement it truly in firmware. Let me quickly explain how this is built up, because I think, so it's one way to look at what I'm now trying to get across is, you know, it's more like a general scheme, you know, something that can work with cryptographic modules in general, and here is an incarnation that works for our cryptographic module in particular. So again, we've got a, you know, software stack, and if I've abstracted it a little to show that it's kind of a generally applicable scheme. We've got a bootloader underneath. We've got our own operating system at UDMACO. Got a set of administrative modules on top of it, then a layer of cryptographic modules, and then that's specific in our case. There is a layer on top which is called CXI, which is a cryptographic extended services interface, which is kind of an, you know, easy to use API that gives you access to all the things that you need. And it's basically that API that we use internally to also implement the providers for engines such as PKCS11 or JCE or CSPCNG. Now we put that CryptoScript runtime environment on top, and this CryptoScript runtime environment essentially consists of three parts. It consists of a compiler that, as I said, you know, may sound strange, but the compiler actually sits inside the hardware security module to make sure you don't have to deal with a tainted compiler. It's got a virtual machine executing the bytecode, so although the name is, the language is entitled CryptoScript to kind of suggest that it's, you know, as easy as a scripting language, you know, it's actually compiled language for efficiency. And it's got libraries, runtime libraries, that give you access to basically the CXI functionality. And then you can write your own scripts. Such a script we refer to as a module, and I'll show some pictures how these modules are actually firewalled and what they can do. But what is truly important is that you can load these custom modules into the secure perimeter of an HSM, and it is very easy to do so. Let's quickly talk a little bit about the core language, what type of language is behind this CryptoScript. CryptoScript is derived from a language called Lua, or in particular from embedded Lua. The choice for Lua, or for embedded Lua in particular, was made because it's a very, very small language in terms of its internal implementation, highly portable, and, you know, we really wanted it to be, you know, efficient and portable, because, you know, it's the code size does have an impact on security. Again, we heard this morning that, you know, the more code you have, you know, the harder it gets to ensure security. So we wanted something that is easily portable and easy to check for security problems. And also we wanted something that from a licensing point of view, you know, would allow for easy portability. And so this is based on an MIT license and not a problem. It's a nifty little language with first-class functions, support for object-oriented design, automatic garbage collection, all the cool stuff that you would expect. Now what we did is we took that language and first off, we pared it down. You know, there are a couple of things that we removed. Some of the things are actually there under the hood for us to use in the implementation, but they are removed from the end user experience for, in part for security reasons, like, you know, for instance, an application programming interface has been removed, so you cannot directly access, you know, firmware code under the hood. And then we enhanced it by adding a couple of things that are truly required to, you know, make it the easy to use but very strong and very secure language that we envisioned for us to be the driver of a hardware security module. We added something that is entitled that's called secure managed memory. I'll talk about that later. We added the command handling and authentication and secure messaging that are required to, you know, get commands and return values in and out of the hardware security module. We added that Lua interface to the CXI class library that we saw before. And you know, before I talked about it being used for cryptography, but it's also there's like a, you know, big number class which gives you arbitrary precision integer arithmetic and arbitrary precision modular arithmetic, so you can actually write your own low-level implementations of your key derivation function or whatever you want to write. And then there are some modules for database and pinpad and smart card access. And there's a cryptographically secure debug interface. I'm also going to talk about this in a minute. Let's begin with a secure managed memory. So the first point is it's managed memory, right? And we gain the benefits that you get from managed memory in the first place, that there is no direct memory addressing, you know, there are no buffer and stack overflows. You cannot, you know, randomly access memory and muck with it. But there's also a second facet where we optimize the language for HSM usage. We worked with on the garbage collector and the memory manager for low memory overhead, you know, to also ensure that there is very low memory fragmentation, because after all, such a hardware security module with such an application is going to be in the field, it's going to be switched on 24/7 for a year straight, so, you know, we really have to have good performance there. We also added a secure memory attribute. So if you're, as I said, you know, it allows for object-oriented programming, so if you're creating a new instance of a class, you can tell it that it should be stored in a secure memory area or in a highly secure memory area, a memory area that comes an alarm is going to be erased, you know, within a millisecond's time. And this attribute is actually inherited and propagated through expression. So for instance, if you say A equals X plus Y, and either X or Y had this secure a memory attribute set, then A will have that secure memory attribute set as well, and, you know, to make sure that derived information is not going to migrate from the secure area to the insecure area. Quick look again at the software stack. We spoke about this before: bootloader, OS, administrative modules, and cryptographic modules on top. On the left-hand side, you see a database, which is where, you know, we store our key materials and other secrets. In fact, it's not just one DB. It's a slight oversimplification. You can have a number of different database objects in our firmware, and you see a placeholder, a representation of audit log on the right-hand side. Then we added the CryptoScript runtime on top, and we added the capability to load multiple modules. So far, we've seen it. Now, in fact, what we support is a concept we call virtual HSM, and that's actually more than just the script. A virtual HSM is the compiled script, you know, in a box that actually holds its state. So the state for two different modules is kept separated. So one one CryptoScript module with a couple of functions cannot peek at another script or another app's memory and cannot interfere with that memory. There are separate audit logs for the different applications. And the audit log actually contains both the custom logging information that comes out of the user script as well as logging information that comes out of the lower levels of the firmware. Optionally, each module can decide to have its own database. If a module decides it wants its own database, it's going to be encrypted with a module specific key again to make sure we've got good firewalling. And in this database, we not only store key material, we actually also store the bytecode. And the application can use it as, some sort of registry or environment to store name-value pairs in general. And it can even use it, like a file system, right? I mean, so if for instance, you wanted to create a file, a/b/c.txt, you could have an entry with that key or with that name in the database, and whatever you would put into the file, you could put into the database under that name, in a way pretty similar to how JavaScript handles these isolation matters. And this way, not even in the file system, the two apps are actually going to interfere with each other. So because of that, there is no direct access to the HSM file system, and there is no direct access to the HSM memory from a CryptoScript app. It really goes through the managed language. And then optionally on top of that, there is a really, what I think, really cool and nifty debugging scheme. So basically, in order to have good and highly secure cryptography, in some instances, we do need to debug stuff. Now, debugging is always, security critical, and we came up with a scheme that actually has multi-layers of security built into it. Each application has a key pair, and you basically, when you load the application, you give a public debug key, and there's a challenge response schemes. Only when you have the private key matching that the public key, you can actually send a debug command to that particular module. So if you're the author of a module, you've got the choice of either putting a public debug key there that enables debugging if you've got the private key, or you can put a nil key, in which case nobody can ever debug that. If you, as an implementer of that module, put that key, then you still need the administrator of the HSM to move along because, the administrator needs to load an optional debug module into the device, and only then you can shell out debug commands to that CryptoScript app. Class library is relatively simple. I'm not showing all of the classes, but I'm showing the main classes that you need in order to get the work done. There is a CXI class that does everything related to generating and deleting keys and invoking mechanisms. There is a key object which allows you to derive or wrap, unwrap, or backup and restore keys. It also has access to the key's attributes, through a very simple associative array. So you go key dot key name, and then you get the name, key dot key group, and you get the group, and so on and so forth. The attribute is also available as a separate object, which then works, kind of like a key template in PKCS11. So if you're, looking up keys, you can define a particular attribute combination and use that for search. Then there is a class for mechanisms and parameters, and then there is a big number class which does arbitrary precision arithmetic. It does so also as modular arithmetic. And then it's got all the bells and whistles you need for, making the thing bigger and smaller, slices, concatenation, logic operators, as well as generation of randoms and primes. Do we still have 3-4 minutes? Okay, I'm going to slow down just a little, and I have to admit that I finalized the slide tonight, and I didn't, you know, I was in a bit of a hurry, and I wanted to, but still put in an example, and I just grabbed something from our R&D test suite here. It's a test that goes over, you know, so basically the HSM is loaded with a set of keys, and what we're trying to do here is we're trying to retrieve keys that have AES set as an algorithm, and then for all these key for all the AES keys, you know, we're going to do something with it. Let me see if I can get that done. So essentially here, what we're going to do is we're going to create a new instance of that attribute class, and we're going to say, okay, I want the attribute, I want the algorithm set to AES, I want the key group to be set to test. Then we go to the CXI object and say, well, give me all the keys that match this attribute. And then we simply iterate over all the keys. We say, well, give me the key with these attributes, and I want the key as volatile. And then we generate a very simple plain text. Then we set up a mechanism. We set up an IV. Again, this I simplified the example a little. And I'm calling encrypt later on with the mechanism and the parameters. You know, very, very simple. It's you look at the code, and, you know, after a couple of minutes, you go, like, I can do that as well. And really, the beauty is that the learning curve is really, really steep. You know, you write that just like you write a shell script. You load it onto the device, and there you go. And, you know, you got very fast turnaround time. So the combination of benefits, I believe, is truly unique right now. It's secured, it's compiled and executed within the secure perimeter of the hardware security module. As we spoke about, the attack surface is substantially reduced compared to host APIs. It's very, very easy to use. I mean, we're programming an embedded device, and no embedded software skills or tools are required. The development of these applications is possible on a real device. So if you've got one of our car or one of our networked appliances, it'll work. And you can also run this on our HSM simulator. And it's fast. I mean, a single call is compiled into a compiled scriptoscript function. It sits on top of the highly optimized firmware, and it can take advantage of the hardware acceleration we've got on our card. So, last slide. What's going to happen in the future? Right now, we're at a concept stage where we're, you know, working with the prototype, making the prototype better. In the first quarter of next year, we're running an early access program. So if you're interested, and that's kind of the first bullet item here, talk to me during the conference or email me later on. I'll get you a draft version of the CryptoScript reference manual, and, you know, you can scratch your head over whether this is right for you or not. And, you know, you may or may not be interested in working, you know, with a thing during the early access program. And, you know, towards the end of the year, we'll probably have something that is general availability. Then the third item and the last I'm going to talk to is secure end-to-end communication. Right now, we're using our proprietary secure messaging implementation, and we've been thinking about, you know, making the step to using SCP-03. So if you have an opinion in that regard, I'd be really interested in hearing it. Thanks for your attention. I think we've got another minute or two for questions, right?
Yeah.
I'm not sure I understood your question correctly, maybe because I think, you know, most of what we're doing right now is available through a guest, to a guest. So, I mean, our HSMs, even today, you know, if you're running, you know, a virtual machine on your host, you can actually access our HSM.
So you have drivers that sit inside the
Well, usually what you would do is you would use one of our networked HSMs and then use that. You can also theoretically, we've you know done that in a few cases, use our driver directly. But right now, I would recommend it makes it easier if you use it through a network appliance. Well, because I told you so. No, there are different facets to complexity. There is the complexity that is reflected in the attack surface, and then there is the complexity of the problem of implementing something, as a cryptographic routine. The math is still as complex as it was before. And if you write your own key derivation function and there is a corner case in which it doesn't quite work, the problem doesn't evaporate simply because I ask you to implement it in CryptoScript. What is going to be reduced is the attack surface visible on the outside. And what you see is that there is a much steeper learning curve. And to some degree, it's really you have to lay your hands on the thing and really try it out. There is, in terms of turnaround time, there is a substantial difference between developing embedded code. And we've got a really, really nice C SDK for our device, and it's cool and it's great still. If you're using an approach that is essentially like I write a shell script, your turnaround time is super duper fast, and you can zoom in on problems real quickly. And the other thing is you've got this. There's something I couldn't quite talk about. Is there is this debugging hook feature which actually allows you to place hooks on the operations and find bugs more easily as long as you put the debugging key into your script. Okay, so the first thing is you simply load a module, the CryptoScript runtime module, onto the standard device. And it's designed to, in the future, run on top of a FIPS certified card in such a way that even if you load a script onto it, it doesn't break the seal of approval. But at the end of the day, the answer is, you don't have to change the hardware of the card. There is a firmware module, the runtime environment that you have to load, and you gain this CryptoScript functionality.
How do you update the firmware of the car?
How do you update?
The firmware. So how's it updated? Is that like physically or?
No, there's a remote update. You build up a secure channel and. There was a third part to your question, which I forgot about.
It was if I want to compile like a CryptoScript and then have it run without a CryptoScript car, is that possible?
Nope. There's ACE and one parsing which I didn't show there, and there's a secure messaging channel that's being built up which happens under the hood, so you don't have to deal with that at the script level, right? Then the command that comes in, there is ASN parsing, and you have to of course kind of check that